Hello there, and welcome to the Thinky Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and today I'm joined by my father, Dr. Scott Keith, and a friend and coworker, Doug Kumbara. How are you?
Doing well.
I think I just butchered your last name. Kumbara.
Kumbara.
Yeah, Kumbara.
There you go.
Whoa, really?
Yeah,
that, you should have told me that like a year
like
ago.
A bear.
Like a bear. There's no E in it, though, so it always throws me off. Yeah. But welcome to the show, Doug. I think this is your, we talked about it, this is your first time on the show, but you've actually been with 1517 for a while. Doug helped the Thinking Fellows get their logo.
Built our website.
Built our website. Yeah, that was actually, wasn't that one of the first things you got
for sure. Yeah,
on board to do?
Yeah,
build our website.
Helping with the logo on the site.
So, so Doug's on the show today to talk about sort of aesthetic and art and bringing style to your work. And so we're gonna talk about a lot of that because he does a lot of creative work. His title at 1517 is the creative director. So he oversees sort of the digital media process at 1517. And before we get into that, just let you know that Thinking Fellows is part of the 1517 podcast network. We have between 12 and 13 shows, depending on listing order. There's about 10 that are weekly shows that you can listen to on there. 1517.org/podcast. You can get pretty much content to listen to every day, which is pretty... Well, you can get content to listen to every day because we have the blogcast, which is every day. And that's only 5 minutes, five to six minutes a day.
Sometimes they're often 10.
Yeah, we have we have some wordy authors on there who make them longer than their
Oh,
I didn't mean you.
Okay.
But they can be upwards of 10 on some of those long ones.
I like the blogcast. Like I like because I don't always, I probably have time to read the blogs, but I don't always take the time to read the blogs. But it's pretty easy to pop on the I hate iTunes app, the app, but don't the iTunes isn't going to like kick us off, are they?
No.
Are they listening?
Probably.
But the app is, I think, very hard to use. But once I figure it out and you just click on that blogcast and go on a drive, it actually, if you start it at the right place, it just keeps playing them, right? Until you can get caught up on a couple weeks worth of blogs.
Well, yeah, in a 30-minute drive, you could get, what, 5 of them almost?
I like it.
So that's pretty good.
The fairy music at the beginning, I got to be sold on a little bit, but I like the blog.
Yeah, there's some creative license used there when picking songs.
I feel like I'm perhaps like going through the tunnel at Small World or something like that. But other than that, it's fine.
That's funny. So we can talk about what we're actually going to do today. I mean, podcasting is definitely related to this, as Doug has helped shape the style of podcasting. But this is one of sort of the episodes of vocation that we do every once in a while. And it's good to have people from all sorts of different vocations on the show. We've had, there's academic theologians on the show all the time, so we've been able to talk about studying. We've had students who are just full-time students on the show to do that. My brother Josh was on the show, who is a knife maker and has worked in various handyman jobs and things like that. And so now, Doug, you're going to talk about sort of creative work, which I think is, there's so, people don't realize this, but there's so much of this now. When you're exposed to a brand or material online, even probably your favorite series of YouTube videos or something like that, the amount of planning and creative work that goes into before that, and not just somebody turning on a camera, is huge. And you're at the ground level of all that.
For sure.
1517.
Yeah. First off, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. Well, I thought, well, heck, man, we've never had Doug on the show, and he's got a lot to say about, especially about, you know, this idea of quality and why we're sort of, why we have a look that looks the way that it does. And
intentional.
Yeah. And I even mentioned it, Here We Still Stand this year, that, you know, between last year and this year, that there's a definite, not that the first year looked bad at all, but there's a noticeable sort of continuity to how things look and the level of quality from the books that are published.
If people pay attention, I mean, it'd be kind of hard. It's easy for us because we work for 1517. But if you went back in our catalog, because we keep it all, there's definitely certain dates where you would see things change. Even the Thinking Fellows logo, because there was the origin of that, which wasn't bad by any means, but it wasn't sort of stylized the way we are now. And so you can see sort of, I would say, like, the pre-Doug days, then you can see the Doug as like contract, like giving us help days, and then you can see like Doug came on full time, and the whole thing kind of like fell in the line.
He's like, now I get to say no.
Yeah. 100%. I think it does go back to vocation, what you're talking about, and just that mixture of you want it to look good, and that is the world we live in today, where it's like, you have to care about this, and you have to give this this look and aesthetic to it that goes back to even quality. It's, if you're not gonna like work hard about it, then why do it? So I do think it that quality does play a big role in shaping that brand and being a part of 1517. It's been cool. We do have a lot of brands, and so we're continuing to grow those brands, and they all have to be thought out. One of the most recent ones was Craft of Preaching that we just launched. And that was a long process. Worked with an illustrator out in the Pacific Northwest. His name's Christian Watson. And worked to give a very craftsman feel to that logo. So it's hand-drawn, kind of Americana, more focused on tools and stuff like that. But you put together those packages, and it makes a difference going down the road to be set up on a good foundation. So
I think it was about 2 years ago that I read the book by Andrew Pettigrew called Brand Luther. You read that too, right, Doug?
Yeah, sure. It's great.
It's an uncharacteristic biography of Luther. I mean, most Luther biographies sort of go through his life, his quote-unquote conversion experience, his
movement towards justification.
Movement towards justification, early life, later life, you know, in Wittenberg. And this does a bit of that, but a lot of this book is aimed at, I mean, and you get a sense of what it's aimed at by the full title. It's called Brand Luther, How an Unheralded Monk Turned His Small Town into a Center for Publishing, Made Himself the Most Famous Man in Europe, and Started the Protestant Reformation. And what Pettigrew suggests is that he didn't just become the most famous man in Europe, like a lot of our brethren would like to imply that it just sort of happened, and that
good doctrine came popularity.
Yeah, and that he didn't do anything about it to make it happen. And Pettigrew, he argues against that idea and says that it was actually, there was a lot of thought, a lot of energy, a lot of craftsmanship that went into putting together quality materials that looked good, were appealing to the eye, were aesthetically appealing, and then even down to the level of putting together sort of a decent and workable method for getting that material out, that led to not only the dispersal of the good theology, but also to people knowing who this man was, right? To the popularity of Luther, and why would somebody spend at that time so much of their hard-earned money to buy a book by a Luther, right? If they didn't know his name and if it looked like crap and, you know, the whole nine yards. And so one of the reasons, you know, it's important that I read that and that Doug read that is because Doug's been taking us at 1517 sort of down a path where he's making, and I'll let you do it, but making that argument to us constantly is that when he came on, you know, it's not like he said everything you do looks like crap, but really it was about having a more sort of thought out approach to this.
So. A look, an aesthetic, a brand. That book definitely opened up my eyes on some stuff. And one of the things was, you hear the big three that lived on that street in Wittenberg.
Yeah, that's pretty huge. It's pretty cool.
Melanchthon, Luther, and Cranach. And Cranach is a huge part of Luther in his story, and Pettigrew talks about that in that book, where he says it's he's integral in getting that message out by creating this brand around him, and that brand was quality of the book, but also his books had a look to them. They had like people would see these, they would see these things and know, oh, this is Luther. Mm-hmm. And that was thought out. That was because of Cranach. And Luther actually, there's some cool parts about this. He does care about this. He does care about the vocation and the craftsmanship. Like he would go into the workshop and like have conversations with, I think it's Leuter and a few other of the publishers, but Cranach worked incredibly hard to give this look, and people recognize that.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I mean, it's there are a lot of names in here. I mean, he originally had a printer. I'm looking at some notes here. A printer by the name of Hans Luft. Mm-hmm. But then it was Lucas Cranach the mm-hmm. elder. Mm-hmm. So he had a son. So Cranach was a he was the mayor of Wittenberg for a while. He's an artist himself. He was a craftsman.
Apothecary.
He had apothecary. All these. And he himself, you know, he had some fame himself for his works. He did a lot of the altarpieces.
Yep.
People sometimes think of Dürer as the great artist of the Reformation, but Cranach, you know, was sort of like the working man's artist of the Reformation.
The background of my phone is a painting from the Alsace in France that they have of Cranach that is actually him reinterpreting Dürer's work to be more Lutheran.
Right.
And things like that.
Yeah. And he lived in Wittenberg. He's a great friend of Luther. He's a good friend of Melanchthon. He's a great friend of Justus Jonas, Luther's pastor and arguably his best friend. And he has a workshop in Wittenberg. And it's just mm-hmm. called the Cranach Workshop. So his son works there eventually too. And a bunch of, I kind of think of it like, you have the 1517 offices in Texas, and that's sort of like our Cranach Workshop. All these people gathered around you to help us create this look. And it was Cranach together with this printing family that Luther actually brought into Wittenberg to help with create this look. It's the Loder printing family, and they put together a look. And that they applied that particular look to even the smallest pamphlets.
Yep.
Before sort of it would get the name, it would pass muster for the Wittenberg sufficiency.
Absolutely, it had a style, and people would copy it too later down the road. Cranach, he worked hard with that, and like you were saying too, they developed an amazing friendship because it almost became a partnership of sorts where. I mean, he was even his best man, I think, at his wedding. There was a vision that kind of they definitely started to come together on. And art critics will go against Cranach on that later down the road, saying he was used. But I think he just kind of his love for his work followed alongside with that. And that's.
Well, his love for Luther's theology
absolutely.
Found an expression in his work.
100%.
Not only his art, but his craftsmanship on behalf of Luther.
Well, and some, like you're alluding to, some Renaissance advocates want to separate sort of the religiosity from it.
100%. Well, and he, I mean, I think what's fascinating is within Christianity at that time, and also I would even say to this day, we're starting to see this resurgence of like vocation, craftsmanship, the stuff, quality matters. And here's no better example for me, someone that I look up to and someone that I'm trying to emulate and see kind of my role within 1517, similar to this, where it's like he is valuing creativity and quality, unlike other people that I had seen or read about in this time. And so, in coming alongside an amazing mind, an amazing scholar with Melanchthon, and it's this trifecta that really gets things off the ground. And so, Steve Osment, this is another book I was going to recommend, is The Serpent and the Lamb. He actually makes this claim that Cranach was, next to Luther, the most important figure in getting this Reformation out. It's a bold statement, but I think, and maybe an incredibly bold statement, but it got this thing going to where people recognized this was coming from one place and one group, and they trusted it, and they got excited about it, and they spread it.
Yeah, well, it is a big claim to make, but if Cranach is producing sort of to the artwork that represents the theology that Luther has begun to teach, as opposed to the Roman Catholic artwork and its portrayal of that theology that has permeated the lives of these believers who are coming to the Reformation. It's not maybe as audacious a claim as one might originally think just upon hearing. I mean, many of the people during this time were not literate. Woodcuts, you know, put next to the catechism, you know, you're explaining the first commandment with Luther's explanation, and then you're providing a Cranach woodcut next to it that represents it pictorially. And it probably more than half of the people are learning as much from the woodcut as they are from the words that they're memorizing.
Yeah. So. I would even, I think Caleb, you were referencing some of the altarpieces earlier. The one in Wittenberg that, I mean, has always been a striking to me is Luther preaching from the pulpit, Christ in the middle, in between the congregation. And that is a picture of Lutheran theology in my mind, yeah, that he has put together like people can just see. They can look at it and they can understand right off the bat, what is this thing about? It's Christ, Christ crucified.
Yeah. And then down at the bottom sections, you have babies being baptized and people coming to the supper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's, when we say that this has to do with vocation, I mean, what are we talking about there? I mean, I think Rod says it on this show quite a bit that he would like to say that the thing that influenced from the Reformation that influenced the world the most is the rediscovery of the doctrine of justification. But, you know, when he really thinks about it, he would say it's probably the discovery of the doctrine of vocation that changed the world the most. And I think what he means by that is just simply saying that during this time when the Reformers start teaching a proper doctrine of vocation, they begin to teach that a believer doesn't have to leave their normal life in order to serve God. And they go a step further and say, in fact, when a believer lives their normal life as husband, father, mother, wife, artist, printer,
yeah, painter,
shoemaker, painter, yeah, that they're doing so to the glory of God. I mean, that's shocking. I mean,
it's freeing.
It's freeing. In that age, it's absolutely shocking because in that age, the idea certainly was that if you were going to serve God, you had to forsake everything in this world, right? You're forsaking money, you're forsaking belongings, you're forsaking good, you're forsaking women. I mean, the whole nine yards, and you're cloistering yourself, I mean, into a room with other people who are doing the same, or an area that with other people that are doing the same. And your day-to-day life isn't about waking up and serving your neighbor. Your day-to-day life is about waking up and serving God, supposedly directly. So when Luther comes out and says, hey, you know, the mother who changes the baby's diaper is doing a better work than 1,000 priests have done in 1,000 years. You know, that's a shocking thing. But how does that tie into this idea of doing things well?
I would say, yeah, I mean, for the artist, for the creative, and that was my background for a long time is photography. I was freelance photography, and I got into creative direction more, and I've been a Christian since the day I can remember and baptized super young. And that's always been something I've tried to figure out is what is that the vocation of an artist look like?
Yeah.
I know it's probably overused and I don't even know if it's totally true, the story, but something that always I came back to was what Luther said is what's a good Christian shoemaker. It's not someone who puts crosses on them. It's someone who makes them really well.
Yeah.
And that is what I go back to as a photographer. What's a good photographer? Someone who does it really well. And I think that is, I mean, what you're free to do as a believer is you get to do this incredibly well for your neighbor. And that can be doing illustrations on a paper. That can be putting paint on a wall. That can be whatever it is. It's going to, if you're working to do that as well as you can, that's where I think the connection is with quality and vocation.
you know, there's some, and we've had this criticism before on from people. Is there a difference between some vocations, though, or like are some more critical than others in that sense? Yeah. Is it as critical for the artist to do a good job as it is for the surgeon?
Hmm. You know what's funny about that question is like our show is typically about objective doctrine or objectivity, research, studied, things like that. This is one of those areas where it is probably more important for society to have doctors than good photographers, right, for the welfare of people. But then you start getting like, you know, in communist Russia, you know, like imagery, right, where life's stripped down to the bare essentials. And one of the things that Luther did and that we have in most of the Western world is sort of this freedom to not only just live the bare essentials of life, but enjoy it. And art, design, things like that, they help us enjoy it. But like you talked about earlier, Doug, or with the catechism, things like that, it can help you learn it. It can mean that's the reason somebody picks something up.
Absolutely.
As far as why the design of like 1517's website is important, the difference between, we would honestly believe the difference between somebody clicking on a link to an article or podcast at 1517 or bypassing it may be the difference between them hearing the gospel for the first time or not, based on that listener. Because this is, again, this doesn't just go out to a group of people in pews already.
Absolutely.
We're trying to spread this to non-Christians, to people who have belonged to non-liturgical, non-sacramental, non-confessional churches and things like that, places that where gospel preaching isn't important, where the sacraments aren't important, and then we're trying to push this message. And
you want to be taken seriously? You get on people's level and get on what is good quality. And I think that's why... for 1517, that just has to be the standard, and it is. We've done a really good job at that with a lot of people's help and illustrators and filmmakers, and it's an exciting place to be. But I think there is a lot of value that you have to put there, because if you're just looking to just be okay, like that's not doing your vocation. That's not going to go or be recognized.
Yeah, that's not the idea of a vocation. Yeah. When you know, Luther talks about it, he talks about it in terms of doing your best, right?
Yeah, yes.
Doing it well.
Yes.
I don't think that's a concept. I mean, that's certainly a concept that one can find in the New Testament as well.
No.
I mean, Paul talks about earning his way as a tent maker.
We know that they paid high quality scribes for those for the scriptures to be spoken and rewritten. We know that the scriptures were recirculated and recopied, and which is why we have such good documentation all the way back to the beginnings of the first century and things like that. Why the biblical documents are the most reliable historical documents? Why? Because they were copied, because they were written, because they were shared.
I think within our circles, that's not something that's always valued. And that's what's really exciting about 1517 and just the ability for us to stand up kind of as a leader in some of that. But I think within even just the broader Christian context, you have both sides where there's the side that maybe all they care about is the looks, but then you get there and there's no meat. There's no theology, no gospel. And so they look amazing and they're doing everything professionally. But there's the other side where it's like, oh, we only care about this. We don't care how anyone receives it or what it looks like. And so
I think one of the funny things to me is if we really do as Christians believe that whether somebody hears the gospel or not is an actual life or death situation, that you're actually going to maximize who you can do that to. And saying things like, well, making it look like the big mega evangelical churches or those that spend money on design or advertising, stuff like that, you're going to water down your doctrine in order to reach them. That's just you being lazy.
100%.
I'm calling people out who have those judgments. That's just you being lazy with the gospel. If you really believe this is life or death, you do want as many people as possible to hear and see it.
Yeah, bring quality. I love it.
So in one of the last episodes we recorded, we had Dan Price on, and he said the internet, but I guess I'd phrase it this way. The digital media, probably as published on the internet, is sort of the publishing of our time, right? Which is kind of weird because we have a publishing house too, and we do we do publish physical books, and those are important to sort of how an important way that we try to get the message out too. But that can be frustrating because online media can just be crap too.
Oh yeah, it can go sour real quick.
But that's not unique either, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the case during Luther's time with printed media too. I mean, there was everything under the sun.
Yeah, no, this is the field we're in right now is going and communicating through digital media and the internet, and it's our printing press at the time. If we're tying it back to the Reformation, that's where we're operating, where we're trying to create those brands, and where we're trying to connect with people. And
good design and things well published on the internet can and has been used for evil as well, right?
For
I
sure.
mean, we all know about clickbait.
Okay. Yeah.
There's definitely that is a real problem, and so what that's attached to, you're still accountable to as well, right? So I think this is another reason why when we spend time, money, energy into these things, when every step of the way, we're also checking the content that goes along with it. You don't want to publish something that's not true,
absolutely.
Proclamation of law and gospel, not all of these things just because it looks good. And those, when we say, hey, these things go through quality checks, that's one of those quality checks. And as sort of an artist who puts a stamp on something, that's one of those things that we're trying to make sure that the artists who are putting stamps on things at 1517 aren't putting them on something bad.
Yeah. It's that partnership that was all the way back to Wittenberg with the three, Melanchthon, Luther, and Cranach. I mean, that's what's happening here. You have the theology, and then you have the artists, and I think you have the scholars, and you're all working together.
One of the things I think, as we get towards sort of the last 10 minutes of the show here, that I'd like to hit on is sometimes when we do episodes on vocation, you get people who are really grateful and freed to hear about sort of somebody discuss their vocation, and then we kind of tie it back to the greater importance of it. But then you get some people who sometimes it's a downer because we're talking about it as sort of our full-time jobs, right? But there may be other things too, because there's some people stuck in jobs where they don't feel like it's their mm-hmm. vocation, right? Where you've been doing X, Y, and Z because of circumstance for so long. Maybe in and outside of design, what is sort of the freeing message of vocation to people who are even stuck in jobs that they don't like or things like that?
I think that it has to do with this idea that we as Christians sort of concoct a view of good works that always in our minds has to do with us doing something extraordinary. Now, certainly we're talking about like quality and that can seem like we're talking about the extraordinary, but I mean extraordinary in the sense that many Christians put together in their head an idea that they're only doing a good work if they're leaving their normal day-to-day life, be that as an artist or a sanitation engineer, right? And which we used to call janitors, and leaving that to go do something extraordinary like dig a well in Africa or build a house in Tijuana or something like that. And that so many people couldn't do that, that they felt sort of left out of this good works train. Or further yet, that doing good works meant and means always being nice to your mom, always doing the dish, and we might get closer in that area, but doing, you know, being something that's unreasonable and or stepping outside of the extraordinary or stepping outside of the normal to do something extraordinary, when in reality, the reason we don't recognize the fact that we're doing good works is because we're simply doing those things that God has laid out for us to do. Literally, as Ephesians 2:10 says it, as he has laid out for us to walk in. Mm-hmm. Right. And when you think of it in terms of that, it's hard to recognize that you're doing it because you're just living life. Right. And I get my example of the doing dishes was a poor example of the reverse, because it's a good example of good works in a sense. Right. If you are in your house and you're part of the family and part of your normal routine in life is just that on Wednesday night you do the dishes and really it's no big deal and you sort of just get up and do them, that's serving the neighbors that are closest to you in your home. Now, when you don't do them and, you know, you probably hate it sometimes and, you know, we'd say in Christ you're forgiven for that, certainly. But the reality is for me, most of the good works I do, when Christ tells the story of, you know, when you visited me in jail and when you fed me and the people, they don't recognize at all that they've done these things for him. That's telling because we 9 times out of 10 won't recognize when we're doing the good works either. Because the times that we are doing, that we think we are doing good works, we're most likely so deeply into our own theology of glory that we've turned something that's good into something that's a sin because we're relying on it in some way to find favor before God.
Yeah, I mean, that goes to like Dave Zoll's talk at Here We Still Stand where he played that clip from The Good Place, right? Where they there's a revelation that they're trying to do good, but that they're only doing good to earn something or to do good works.
Which makes it bad.
Which then makes it bad because the motivation's about me gaining.
And you feel like you can't win, right? Yeah. And that's in that scenario. But what if it's just about getting up and doing those things that are your lot in life, right? And doing them to the best of your ability, seeking forgiveness for the times when you do them begrudgingly, of course. But 9 times out of 10, that's not your life. Nine times out of 10, your life is, listen, I pour a cup of coffee in the morning and I pour your mom a cup of coffee too. And as I'm waddling out to my chair to sit down and enjoy my cup of coffee, I just simply hand her hers. And it means nothing to me, but it means a lot to her.
Well, and one of the things with Christian freedom and the true forgiveness of all sin is that even sometimes when your wickedness drives you to do something good, you were still used for good. So when sort of your selfishness, you know, oh, I'm going to do the dishes tonight because it'll make me look better than my sister or something like that. The dishes still got done, okay? Now, not for the best reasons and kind of negates it, but that job
your neighbors were still served.
Yes, right.
And the reality is that how is that freeing? Well, not all of us can drop what we have for 2 weeks a year and have the money to buy a plane ticket to Africa to go help build a well, right?
Yeah.
But we can all do what God has called us to do in our daily lives. Now, in some cases, again, that's going to be you're a janitor, right? And in some cases, that's going to be you're a photographer. In Doug's case, it's a photographer. He's a creative director. That may seem glamorous, but I've...
I can tell you.
Yeah, but I've seen Doug at our events. It's not glamorous, right? He's working his behind off.
He gets to enjoy things like Here We Still Stand way less than I do or you do.
Yeah.
Many of the other employees at 1517 were... For us, it's like I have one day at the beginning, and then it's kind of sort of a big break of listening to talks and food and drink, and and then you're
on your feet all day. It's funny. The product looks glamorous,
yeah.
But what the product doesn't show you is the toil that made it look like that.
Yeah.
And it's but it's freeing because you know what? He is serving God in doing that, not just because he's working for an organization that proclaims the gospel. He'd be serving God and do that if he were at a children's photo studio, you know?
Could be anything.
But he's got a talent for that. God has gifted him with that. God's called him into a position where he is able to do that. He's been hired. He's doing it faithfully. And when he does so by serving his neighbors, he's doing so to the glory of God. Because he's doing it for the least of these, my brethren, which is you and me and everybody else that gets to utilize that. And he doesn't have to drop his normal life to go do it because what he's actually been called into is his normal life.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to just do those things in his normal life means that he's also able to still be there for his wife and his other family that live near him and serve them in that way too, serve his closest neighbors in that way too. That's why it was freeing. That's why it is freeing. That's why it was freeing during the Reformation. People woke up and said, you mean I don't have to like forsake my family and become a priest? I can just keep making boots?
Yeah, yeah.
And Luther says, yeah, you can.
Yep.
It's great.
Well, very cool. Hey, Doug, thank you for being on this episode
of the
show. It's the Christmas, we talked about this. This is a Christmas party for 1517, so everybody's down here today, which is why it's fun to kind of break away from some of the normal shows that we do where it's just sort of the regular host of Fellows and get people who, the voices behind 1517, people who make the work happen. So thank you again, Doug. For anybody who wants to sort of check out the products at 1517, maybe this is the only project you're familiar with, go to 1517.org. There's a bunch of tabs there. The organized, the website is done well because Doug has put in some thought into this. So you can go see all of our podcasts on the podcast network. You can go see our books under the publishing button there. There's
our
resources,
logos,
articles.
You'll see Doug's
Academy,
and
all that.
Yep. The donate button, the big red donate button in the top right corner. So if you're just a, we do have a lot of new listeners to the Thinking Fellows in the last couple of months. We've actually jumped up by several thousand listeners a week. And so I'm imagining that many of you, this is the only way that you're in touch with 1517. So yeah, please do go check out those other resources. Things like the blog are similar but different, and also the publishing house, where we've got plenty of resources there as well for purchase. All right, we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.